Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
You're listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 81 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can follow us on X or Blue Sky at Emerald Flow Show. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a five-star review. And you can donate to the show at voicesofwrestling.com/donate if you're feeling generous. I'm Gerard, back here with Paul. And Paul, we have to start off this week with some somber news. A couple of wrestlers have passed away. We'll start first with Osamu Nishimura, because I feel like he maybe wasn't going to get as much attention as the other person we're going to talk about. I was a huge Nishimura fan from like the early 2000s when he was still in New Japan. I just thought that he was just a great technical wrestler, just an incredible style. He could also like do all sorts of different matches. He would obviously New Japan during that Inokism era and then jump to All Japan and had some really great matches there. One of my favorite matches of him of all time is his Triple Crown match against Kawada in 2004. This is very tragic. He leaves over behind a six-year-old child, and this is the second time he battled cancer, because he had previously in the late 90s. So I was just like, you know, and I think a lot of people will know him from his very brief ECW, which got a lot of attention. But I would recommend going back and checking out a lot of his G1 work in the early 2000s. There's a great match against Jun Akiyama in the G1 also. And he had a number of strong tag matches, whether he was teaming with Fujinami or Manabu Nakanishi and everything like that. So, you know, sort of an end of an era because there's also not a lot of guys left like him.
Yeah. It's actually, yeah, I think Nishimura, I think underrated, right, is like the best way to describe him because, like, he's never really somebody you hear, like, talked about. Like, and to be fair, like, I think Nishimura's, well, quote-unquote problem is that he was, like, he came up in an era where there were just so many, like, just, like, top, like, all-time legends of the business, right, because he came up in the 90s. So obviously a lot of focus, like in New Japan was like on the Three Musketeers and you had All Japan just like having like all kinds of great matches and everything. And I felt like Nishimura kind of got lost in the shuffle a bit there. And then I think his career just never really like got going to like what it potentially could have been then. Like even when he like jumped from New Japan to All Japan. Yeah. But I think there's still like so much like great stuff from him. Like there's so much like forgotten stuff from him as well that like it's really worth like going out and seeking out. It's actually something I came across where I didn't know that there was actually footage of that out there, is he randomly had an excursion to Europe in 1997. And there is actually footage of that out there, and it is actually pretty good. Like 1997, it's like dying days, like CWA stuff, so like it can get quite dire in terms of like audience and everything, but like there's some like I think once you watch that you kind of realize why there is this like appreciation for like a specific style of like technical wrestling in Japan, right? Like because you have like the 16 karat is like this weekend, and you have like the Ambition tournament as part of that. And I think it's almost a shame that somebody like Nishimura never actually like competed in that, because I think he actually would have like fit in really well, because he was one of the guys that brought that style to Europe. Right. So yeah, really underrated guy. Like also just kind of, I have never heard anybody say a bad thing about him either.
No, he seems to be very popular.
Exactly. Like because it's also kind of crazy because like I just watched him like live last year when I was in Japan. And yeah, the cancer seemed to come back, like, because he announced that he had cancer, like, because he seemed fine when I was there. And then I think, like, around this time last year, like, I think around March, I think is when they announced that he had cancer, like, that it had come back. And, yeah, I think it was really aggressive. I think they found it in multiple places, and...
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a real shame. I think he was also important in terms of, like, because he was, like, he was, like, the local mayor.
Yeah, who was, I don't think he was he's a counselor for the, was it Bunkayo ward, which is where the Tokyo Dome is.
Yeah.
So that's like right heart of Tokyo type thing.
Yeah. So I think like wrestling loses like somebody like speaking up for it specifically there, like in an area where it's really important to have somebody there that can like defend, like speak up for the interests of wrestling. So like it's just a massive loss from just so many like angles essentially.
Also I was going to say he was a more traditional black tights guy in the transitional area where you had your, your pretty boys and your idols like Tanahashi emerging too.
that was definitely weird. Like towards the end of his New Japan run where it's like, here's Asami Nishimura who like looks like he's like straight out of the 70s and he's next to Tanahashi.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, the business was changing from what it once was. But yeah, I mean, also underrated tag worker too, I think. He had a lot of great tags. Then that was sort of a part of it. And so from there, we also had Gran Hamada, who I think it's been a while. It's been a couple weeks since he passed away. A lot of people have talked about him. And obviously there's that great obituary by Case Lowe at Voice of Wrestling. But also one thing I got to say, because he was in All Japan, he jumped to All Japan, I think, in the 80s and was sort of like one of those guys in around in sort of the Onita and then Tiger Mask 2 era. But one thing that I didn't see get brought up, and I figure I'm going to bring it up. He was a key guy that they brought in right after the Noah split for like, I don't know, a year or two. and he was mixing up in a lot of those undercards in the early post-split All Japan with Grand Naniwa, also RIP, who's one of my favorites, and a lot of the Torimon guys who used to work tours in like the undercard and everything like that. So that was also, I think, a little forgotten part of his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing I was thinking of when they were doing the ceremony on the All Japan show, where they like held up his portrait and did the 10-bell salute, and it was Wada was the one that was holding the portrait, and
yeah,
like for some reason, like the thought that struck me there was like, it has to be weird for Wada that like he's no longer just like holding up, like he's no longer doing this just for like guys where he's like their like peer in terms of age and everything, right?
Yeah.
Like now he's also doing it for guys that were like, that are like significantly younger than him. Like that has to be such a weird feeling that like how many times has he done this as well? Like it mm-hmm. has to be like, I don't know, like, do you, I don't know, like it just struck me as like, do you ever get used to that? Like weird.
Yeah, no, it is. Especially in this.
Yeah.
So I was a rock. He was in All Japan post-split longer than I thought. He came in like in 2001, and he was there until very early 2005. So he had like a 4-year run there.
Yeah, which is longer than I thought it was, to be honest.
Yeah,
because I definitely remember him like immediately after the Noah split, but then I don't really remember him for much longer after that. I didn't realize that he stuck around for that long.
Listen to this one. Real World Junior Tag League. This was in September 2002. Grand Hamada and Masanobu Fuchi defeat Kendo Kashin and Robbie Brookside.
Yeah, that sounds like an early 2000s All Japan match.
Oh, wow. Jimmy Yang and Kasayashi versus Grand Hamada and Masanobu Fuchi. 30-minute time limit draw.
I mean, that could actually be good.
It could actually, but you know. And so, yeah. And he was also, those who remember, he was also one of the Love Machines.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously hugely influential in terms of bridging that gap between Lucha Libre and Puro. Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen much of his Mexican stuff, so I speak to that. But obviously, you know, a stalwart of those Michinoku Pro 6-man tags and everything like that. And just, you know, certainly one of the most influential wrestlers ever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Joe and Rich talked about it on the flagship as well. Like for example, with his Mexican stuff, there just isn't that much footage out there. Like, it's not like you can actually just find a lot of it. Like, a lot of it just wasn't, like, it literally wasn't taped. It was, like, a promotion that went under, like, 20 years ago, and nobody has that. Like, the tapes just got destroyed or lost, or, like, just aren't available or in somebody's basement. So it's just... It's weird that somebody so influential, like so obviously influential, because if you see him wrestle, like you can just like see that, and like almost every like modern wrestler just has such, because it's not like we're talking about somebody from like the 50s or 60s, right? Where like, okay, that makes sense that there's like stuff missing. Like, we generally have a lot of footage of people that were influential from the 90s and early 2000s, right? Like, except for him, like he's like the missing link in a way. Like we have enough of his stuff to like see how influential he was, but we don't have nearly enough to really like properly evaluate his career in a way. Like, it's very weird. Like, it's almost like, oh yeah, like Misawa is just like obviously important wrestler for like the Japanese main event style, but we only have like imagine if we only had footage from like half of his Triple Crown matches. Or like not even half, right. Like a quarter of his Triple Crown matches.
Yeah, exactly. So actually, since we're talking about 2000s All Japan with
this- Yes. So and now we can kind of really nail down when we're recording this episode, because yesterday WCW, or rather WWE created a WCW YouTube channel. And I obviously immediately dug into that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go watch Greed, the last ever WCW pay-per-view. And the first person that greets me on the screen is Von Kiwi, better known to everybody, obviously, as the Funkster in All Japan. And I was like, okay, this match is way better than it has any right of being, because, yes, he actually had a relatively long All Japan run. I think it was 2 or 3 years, actually. But that's really all I remember about it, because otherwise I'm like, that happened. And otherwise, I'm struggling to think of literally anything he did in All Japan.
They didn't really do anything.
No, he was just a body. And like I think the best comparison to like current day would be like, right, like somebody like, what's his face? Why am I blanking on it now? The Irish guy on Inoue. AJ Cleary. Like, right, like he's like, he was kind of like LJ, right? Like he was like similar where he was like, he was a good worker on the undercard and he did solid work on the undercard, but he was also never pushed in like to any degree at all. He was just a guy they brought over to like fill out the undercard.
Yeah, I it's also kind of funny because it's like, well, why'd you spend that money to fly him all the way? But it's
Muto. Yeah, exactly. Yes, I mean, it is Muto. So, but still, like if you want to bring him over, you at least need to, I don't know, like give him at least one title shot to justify it.
He would have been there at the same time. And
yeah. Oh, that's probably where the connection was made. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Because, yeah, why else would Muto be like, yeah, I want to bring over Kriwi? Because, again, solid, like, solid wrestler, but not like, oh, yeah, this is, like, spectacular guy that I, like, need to, like, book immediately and, like, bring over for, like, 3 years. And then I think he was in, like, one tournament that entire time.
Yes, that is just a funny throwback because... That was the first thing I thought of when you mentioned that, right?
The Funkster, yeah. Oh, yeah, same. I was also immediately like, it's like, oh my God, it's the Funkster.
Yeah. So from there, we've got Ryuji Saa had announced he's retiring on May 12th.
It's the lads and
I don't think I have seen a Ryuji Saa match since he stopped getting booked by All Japan, though.
So thankful that they stopped booking him. I mean, to be fair, he was solid for a long time until he really wasn't.
Yeah.
And then he was just like, horrific.
Until like 2015, 2016, he just stopped trying.
I can literally tell you what match it was when he stopped trying, which was dreadful like time limit draw with Shuji Ishikawa.
I remember that. That was in 2019.
Yeah. Because until then, I was always like, yeah, Ryuji Saa is like, okay. And then I was like, oh, yeah, he has a match with Ishikawa. That could potentially be good. And then it was just dreadful, boring 30 minutes of nothing happening. And that was every Ryuji Saa match after.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, that shows the likelihood of that show being televised.
It's Land's End. Like, we literally joked that it's not a real promotion because it's never televised.
Yeah, and everything like that. But, I mean, he was a name starting in 01 and into All Japan in the 2000s and 2010s and everything like that. So, you know, worth a mention.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he literally brought the Land's End guys to like Ireland.
Yes.
Like he actually brought them places and everything. And I guess they've split off from him now. Maybe? I don't know if they have.
Maybe. I think Demonji is still sort of in his orbit.
Yeah.
But he's the only one that has done anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Did he even still run shows in like Korea? Because that was always the thing, right? They would run shows in Korea and Japan.
Yeah, they ran a show. Oh, they ran a show on February 9th.
Okay, fair enough. So like that still like again, it just never makes tape, so might as well like happen in the void.
So main event was remember the All Asia Heavyweight title?
Yes. I was actually wondering what happened to that because the Bodyguard won it on an All Japan show and then it was never defended again on a All Japan show.
So Demonji's.
Hasn't he had that title for a while now? I think we did this like
he's had it
a year or so ago.
2023.
Yeah, so like why is that? Like we have the All Asia tag titles in All Japan, right? Why can't we get like an All Asia singles title match as well?
Because wasn't that title created for Sai basically?
I think so, yeah, because Bodyguard well recreated, right? Because it was on hiatus since like the 70s, I think. And then the Bodyguard randomly won it, and then I think Sai won it relatively quickly, and then it just disappeared into the void.
The title had existed until 1995 when Kentaro vacated after 14 years.
Yeah, of I'm sure many defenses over those 14 years.
Well, Cage Match only has one defense of that title listed, and it was in 1982 in an All Japan show in South Korea.
The most prestigious title. Yeah. No, wait, didn't he win? Didn't didn't Ryuji Sai win it off of the Bodyguard on a Koliga show? Because I remember during the pandemic when everybody was watching Koliga because it was the only thing that was on. And they did this big Ryuji Sai like heel turn. And everybody's like, yeah, let's watch Koliga. And then they bring in Dylan James on the next show. And everybody's like, never mind. I'd literally rather not. Like, it's literally the only thing on, but I don't want to watch this.
No. So they had a tournament in Land's End. And yeah. Sai defeated the Bodyguard. He defends it against Naoya Nomura and Yoshitatsu. And then drops it to the Bodyguard in Osaka. On the show where Zeus beat Kento for the Triple Crown.
Oh, yeah.
And then...
Yeah, that was on the undercard of that. Yeah.
And then the Bodyguard dropped it to Kim Nam-seok. Well, he defended against Naoya Nomura once. And then he dropped it in Seoul to Kim Nam-seok. And then it eventually became announced vacant in 2023. And then... So Demonji beat, do you know who he beat for the vacant title in a decision match?
Is it Shoji Otani?
No, but you're on okay. The track of.
Okay. Is it Dylan James?
Of course it's.
Oh, God.
Let's see who he's defended this title. He's defended it either in Land's End or Big Japan. It has not shown up in great.
Anywhere else, yeah.
Yeah, it defended against Koji Doi. Levi Nixon, I don't know who that is. Tempesta, Keegan Breb, I don't know who that is. Yes, Fumi Nakanui, Kazumasu Yoshida, Kuma Rashi, Daisuke Sakamoto. That was in Big Japan, obvious. And yeah, he just defended against this John Hammond, who doesn't even have a cage match profile.
Oof.
South Korea on the 9th.
I'm so curious about these South Korea shows because the most random people show up on these.
Yeah. Well, like, let's see who's on the show. So it's like a few of his guys. And then it's some South Korean wrestlers. So it's like, here we got Dylan James defeated Bad Little Seopji. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So yeah, I mean, that's Land's End these days. Like
also, because we touched on great real quick. Did you see the comments from our favorite Nakajima?
Someone said he said something stupid, but I can't remember what it was.
Basically, he's like, he wants to fight Kota Ibushi. And he said that he's not really interested in like wrestling anybody else from Great because they're all boring.
Oh, God.
And the way it was framed, basically, there was the official Great press conference. And then after the official press conference is when he dunked on everybody in Great. So he might be burning that bridge as well. At which point I'm like, okay, like, where does he even go? Like, is he going to end up in, like, Heat Up? Is this where this is going?
Oh, I was going to say, like, Kyushu Pro or Dove Pro or something.
Kyushu Pro is, like, too wholesome to, like, book Nakajima.
That's also very true. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I think I'm going to ask Andrew to, like, make another version of the theme. And I think we need to say goodbye to Nakajima's theme.
Well, here's the one thing. Great could be stupid enough to run an angle at the same time.
It could very much still be an angle, yeah. Which is like, yeah, no, we're going to have him bury all of our guys and then he's going to beat them and somehow we're going to benefit from this.
I'm sure this all makes sense in Shima's head.
Yeah. I think with Shima we see like some of the long-term effects of like steroid exposure.
All right. And next up, Paul, did you see Yoshiki Inamura versus Ivar?
No, I haven't actually. Is it on X? Like right, it was on Speed, right? So it was on X, yes. Formerly known as Twitter.
Yes, it was on X, the Everything app.
Ah.
it was actually pretty good for a 2-minute and 22-second match.
I can't imagine. I mean, those two are good.
they condensed like a 12-minute never open weight title match into 2 minutes, basically, and they just start by slapping each other.
Oh, that reminds me, actually, on the topic of Inamura. Because I did, there is actually something, now I remember what I wanted to talk about. it was because I did actually see an Inamura match, which was the one on the NXT, like, pay-per-view or whatever they call it.
Okay, because I thought about watching that, but I never got around to it.
So I actually watched that match, yeah. So it was him and Josh Briggs challenging Fraxium for the NXT titles, tag titles. It was really good. It was a really, really good match. I even have to, like, hand it to Josh Briggs as someone that's not a very big fan of his. He did actually really well in this match. I had to change commentary to like Hindi because I couldn't deal with the English commentary with like Booker T. I should also mention I don't speak Hindi. I was just to have something in there.
They don't have German commentary?
No, they didn't have German commentary.
Oh, I'm surprised. Yeah. I thought they would have.
Yeah, no, for some reason they don't have German commentary, at least not on Netflix. I don't know what's up with that, but yeah. I probably wouldn't have switched it to German. Like, so there is actually this thing that like, if I find a commentary annoying, which WWE commentary is, I will just switch it to a language I don't speak. So I can't be annoyed at it if I don't understand it. It's basically my rationale. So I switched it to Hindi. But the match itself was really good. Like, I would go about like 4 stars on that.
Yeah, I heard it was good.
Yeah, I think Inamura did pretty well in there as well. But at the end, he was like the one taking the pin, obviously.
Yeah.
Who knows if they're going to do something else with him or not, or where this whole thing is even going. Because like, on the one hand, that doesn't seem like they're doing all that much with him. But then again, it's not like Noah was doing much with him. So like, if I'm him, I guess maybe he's going to stick around there. I literally have no idea like where this whole thing is going. Like, if he's going to stay there, he's going to come back to Noah to do nothing. If he's just gonna like, maybe he's just gonna retire. Like, who the fuck knows?
He can come back. Say he was on American TV and
maybe. At this point, I'm just like, I don't know.
I mean, he looks good. Like, he still looks like he's got fire and everything. He hasn't, you know, lost his enthusiasm and anything like that, right? Which is always.
But he'll be in his mid-30s by the time he comes back.
What do you think the chances of him coming to stop Ozawa's Reign of Terror are?
Zero.
Oh yeah. I'll give it a 10%.
Yeah, that's the optimistic one. Maybe, like I said, I think the back-to-back of them giving him a title match with Kaito and me being like, okay, they're finally doing something with him, and then them doing absolutely nothing with him in the N1, and then him going to WWE right after just kind of broke me. So,
sure.
Like, I am literally like, I will not believe that they're ever going to do anything with this man, and I will be happy when they actually do something with him, but until that actually happens, I will just be expect the worst with this man's career, because it seems to be cursed for some weird reason.
I mean, so from what I was told, even though Toronto is a famously very big wrestling, very notorious hot crowds, the fandom even there for WWE is like the same way with everything else, where everyone sits on their hands except for the entrances and the catchphrases and finishes. But apparently, because this was filmed in Toronto on Elimination Chamber weekend, they actually got the crowd going just through their work.
Yeah. No, they definitely, it definitely was quiet at the beginning, and then the crowd actually.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Ivar versus Inamura from Speed. Sorry, that's what I meant. Their work woke up a crowd that, you know, just sits on their hands generally, which I think is for Inamura's ability and everything like that, and a testament to him. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I just don't see that he would ever be a guy that WWE would want to push, right?
No.
Like, he's also too small for that as well.
Yeah, he's short.
Yeah.
Especially there.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. But then again, like, he's done more than Jiro ever has. So
he technically has done more than Jiro ever. Well, Jiro was a zombie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they did have jacket zombie time, so...
They did.
No, he has not been a zombie. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's just been, like, Yoshiki in a world. Like, they haven't even, like, changed his gimmick, really. Like, he's just, like, at least not in this match. Like I don't really watch, like, this stuff regularly, but I was like, okay, if it's on Netflix, I might as well just dip in and watch this match, especially since it got hyped up. And, like, I didn't see any difference. Like, he just seemed like normal, like, Yoshiki in a mirror in this match.
Yeah. So, obviously, you know, I'm pulling for the guy because he's great and everything like that. And he would be another helpful addition to Noah.
Absolutely. Like, I think if they want to do something with him, like, actually, you know what? The more I think about it, the more I like your idea that he's the one that, like, ends the Ozawa reign. I just don't have any faith. I love that idea, and I wish so badly that it would happen, but I'm just, yeah. I'm not going to get Lurden again. I've been burned many times.
All right, so let's move on to the NOAH Junior Tag League Tour. We're not going to go over everything. We'll just do some main thoughts and maybe our favorite matches. For NOAH, I would say that it seemed to have drawn pretty well, but they don't run particularly large buildings on spot shows. Like, you know, because I think even most our New Japan spot shows are in buildings of 1,000 people, right? Even if they don't draw 1,000. But they're running like 500-600 seaters still on spot shows like All Japan. But we'll talk about business when we get to the big show. So, Paul, big picture on the Junior Tag League, I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was any filler except for maybe a little bit of boringness from a certain wrestler complained about to death. And I don't even think they were that bad. I would just say that would be the weakest element of the tour. Again, nothing spectacular, but I just really enjoyed it as a solid tournament that puts some structure and direction in your division, which is always needed in NOAH.
Mm-hmm. No, I also really liked it because it actually gave these spot shows like some juice, right? Because these spot shows, like sometimes in like Yokohama Radiant Hall or whatever, like they're not really bad, but there also like isn't never really anything to like sink your teeth into with these. Yeah. Like it's not like they often do much like in terms of like storyline developments on these.
Yeah.
Although I feel like even outside of the like junior tag, like I feel like they at least did a little bit more like story work with like Team 2000X on these, like because we had like the whole thing of like Endo basically like trying to like lure Kikuchi to like convince him to like join Team 2000X, which was like a thing they tried to do like over the tour, which obviously like there was a payoff for that on like the big show. But then, like, outside of that, there wasn't much. And but the Junior Tag League match was always, like none of them blew me away. But at least, like, there was, like, a feeling of importance to them. And, like, people were also, like, working a little bit harder than they normally would on these spot shows, too.
Yes. I don't think anyone really phoned it in. A couple of other points I wanted to know. I think Ada and Daiki Odashima might have been my favorite team. I know that they've been talking him up on the flagship, but I think Daiki Odashima is even underrated. I'll tell you why. Where else are you going to get this undersized guy, even by junior standards, who can fly around the ring? He's very fast on his feet, beautiful dropkick, but he also throws some great suits. That is a very rare combo.
No, that is fair, because otherwise I would have like said to you, well, you can find him in All Japan with Taishi Nagao, but I do think Odashima has like much better suplexes. Yes.
Oh yes, yes, yes. I agree. He has those similar things to Taishin, but I gotta give the edge with those very clearly Tamon Honda instructed
suplexes. Yes, no, that's very obvious. Like who he got those from. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
It also seems like again, like they're involving him in a lot of like stuff and everything already. Like it really seems like NOAH is kind of like moving these people, like these guys up like a lot faster. So like with him and Ata also, like their team splitting up and everything, as much as I enjoyed them, like I am really wondering if like Odashima is like no longer going to be like in young boy status like this time next year, right?
He will this time next year he might be higher ranked than Junta Miwaki.
Yeah, he might be. Like, I'm still not sure, like, spoilers, like, if Kai Fujimura, or not Kai Fujimura, if Junta was supposed to win the Junior Tag League.
I think so.
I think so, too, but, like, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, so, sort of getting back to that about the winning tag tournaments, bracketing out the final match, which we'll get to in a minute, how did you think of True and Lacey?
I think they definitely worked hard. Like I think they definitely tried hard.
Better.
Yeah, they did get more comfortable. Yeah. Which is a thing we see very often, right? With guys when they come to Japan for the first time, like a lot of people for like their first couple of matches, it can be a bit shaky because you're in a completely different country. You're in front of a different crowd.
Yeah.
Like you're not quite sure. Like sometimes it can also be like, if you're a big wrestling fan, I think sometimes there can also be a bit of like, just awe, right? Like a feeling of awe there as well. So like a bit overwhelmed. But then like a lot of people kind of tend to adjust, especially if they stay for like a full tour where they wrestle a lot, like these guys did, where you can see them with every match, you could see them get more comfortable.
You also have to figure out how to do other things to get heat other than yell yeet.
Yes. Which, I mean, you can still try to do that and get that over there, but you have to do other stuff as well.
Yeah. Do you have any particular favorite matches from the block stage?
I did actually really like the Amakusa Junta Miyawaki versus Tadasuke Yuta Kikuchi match.
Yes, that was a...
I thought that was definitely one of the best matches. Let me see if I can remember anything else off the top of my head. I actually liked the True and Lacey versus Eita and Daiki match.
Oh, on the
as well.
First night? Yes, that was also a good match. I also liked Amasuka and Miyawaki versus Kotoge and Ohara on the 20th.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was a good match too, yeah.
So, you know, a very solid tournament. But, you know, I mean, this was only, the block stages were only maxing out in front of like 500 fans. And like the rest of those shows were like very kind of repetitive main events because it was like Soya versus 2000X and everything like that. Although that Yokohama Radiant show, Manabu Soya and Tatsuke defeating Ozawa and Owada-san, I thought that was a main event too.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe had some foreshadowing, but we'll get
to
that.
Yes, definitely did.
So we go to March 2nd. Memorial Voyage 2025 in Yokohama, NOAH Junior Tag League 2025 at the Yokohama Budokan in front of 1,605 fans. So let's talk about NOAH attendance, because this is a record for NOAH Yokohama Budokan, which they have tons of dire crowds in.
Yes.
Like, I think 964 on one show. Over in the NOAH channel on the VOW Discord, Oddjobs put together a great chart. And NOAH's been setting some records, not a few all time, but Yokohama Budokan's only existed for like two or three years. But they set a new record in Shinjuku Face, in Gimese Main Hall, in Kumamoto Castle Civic Hall. And they've had their biggest Korakuen Hall attendance in 2025 since 2019. So,
biggest Edeon number 2 since 2018 as well. Like, I think that's a really good, like, because that's like really pre pandemic.
Yes. So this is working.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think that's, you can see that every single time that like Ozawa is a big deal. Like they put him on like this Yokohama Budokan show. Like if you look at the card, right? It's not a lot on there. Like there's not really all that much to like sink your teeth into. Like there's only one title match on the whole show, which is the main event. Like, yeah, you have the Junior Tag League final, and but then aside from that, like, the Junior Tag League is not really like a prestigious tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, again, like the only other, like, they try to sell a little bit that like Masaki Tamira's Marufuji is a big match, but like, let's be real, it's not. So again, like putting him on there, and like also against Manabu Soya, it's also not like they put him on there against like one of their biggest stars either, right? Like they didn't put him against the Keno here or against the Kaito or even the Marufuji. So like it was kind of a secondary challenger as well. And again, he set the record for the building.
Yes.
It was very noticeable, right? Did you notice that as well, that they turned down the lights a lot less than they normally do in this building?
Yeah. But I will say, yes, they did, because it's not as embarrassing. But I did think the crowd was not particularly good until the main event.
No, but it never is in this building. Like, that's a problem for this building in general, where like everybody has shit crowds in this building. And again, 1,605 is their record, but it's still like way behind what like other promotions have drawn in that building.
Yes.
Like they still got outdrawn by like what's it called again?
Is Stardom?
They got outdrawn by Stardom, but not even that. They got outdrawn by the what's it called again? The Joshi promotion, the other one.
Marigold?
No, not Marigold. Smaller than that. why am I blanking on the name now?
Who's in this promotion?
It's wait. Okay, I'm just gonna. I'm also blanking on it. Like I'm completely, my brain is completely short circuit. No, not Wave. It was the first promotion I went to in 2019 when I landed in Japan, and they had the show on Shinjuku Face. Why am I completely blanking on everybody's name that is also involved in the promotion? Because there's some big stars, and I can't. Like, it's literally one of those moments where, like, I'm going to kick myself in the ass afterwards. Like, I can literally, Marvelous? Like, I can see the No, I can see the logo. that's the problem here even more so. It's they have a red logo and it's, wait, okay. Now I'm just going to go to Yokohama Budokan.
Well, now, Oz Academy?
Yes, it's Oz Academy. Jesus fucking Christ. Oh, God. Yeah, that was literally one of those moments. And it's like, yeah, you know, like, you remember all of the people that wrestled in Oz Academy? It's like, some of the biggest stars ever in fucking Joshi. It's like, nah, I can't remember the name or any of their names. It's fine. See, that's the thing with the Alzheimer's.
So we'll start off, I guess, yeah. I mean, we'll see if this continues with the next Korakuen, is what I'll say as I get into the show. So first off, Ada, Daiki, Odashima, Alejandro, and Kai Fujimura defeated Atsushi Kotoge, Hajime Ohara, Jun Masoka, and Gaia Hawks in 1142 with the zero gravity from Alejandro on Kotoge. This was a good opener and exactly what it needed to be, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to keep Masoka and Hawks around,
which I think is a good idea. I mean, it's also the classic Noah play, right? It's like, get some like indie scummers. Okay, that might be a bit harsh, but you know, get them in and then just turn them into regular roster members over the time.
Yeah. And then Anthony Green and Zaziah defeated Shuhei Taniguchi and Black Mensa Ray at 922 with the pile driver from Green on Mensa Ray. Strangely enough, this might have been my favorite match on the undercard.
Yeah, no, that was pretty good. Also, I think it might have been too fast to declare that like Zaziah's tour was over, but like, yeah. It definitely was over like with this one because like he's wrestling at Oberhausen tomorrow. So
okay, okay.
Or today, today because it's Friday. Like he might be wrestling right now.
So on Zaziah, I think he did very well, but I also feel like they didn't give him the chance to show everything.
Yeah, no, because they really just kind of like kept him in like undercard tags. They never really like gave him like anything big, really.
Yeah,
not even like a single. Like he didn't have any singles matches, right?
No.
Not even on a spot or anything, yeah.
Give him something against, like, I don't know, a junior or Taniguchi.
Yeah.
Or Yone or whatever. 25th anniversary special, All Rebellion versus Dark Agents. Kaito Kiyomiya and Galeno. I keep pointing him out. But he's a babyface. Defeated Takashi Sugera and Masao Inoue in 14-12 with the Shining Lancer from Kiyomiya on Inoue. I don't have anything to say for this except for Inoue should not be allowed to wrestle.
No, he really shouldn't be. Like, if there's anybody that is very experienced in like wrestling people that can't move, it's Kaito, and even he couldn't do anything with Inoue here.
Well, I mean, Mudo could work the crowd in ways that
And on his back, and even on his back, Keiji Muto is also still a better worker than Masao Inoue ever was. So there's also that.
So then Jack Morris, Daga, Tetsuya Endo, and Awada-san defeated Hayata Yohei, Tadasuke, and Yudo Kikuchi when Endo pinned Kikuchi, obviously continuing their in 11:30, continuing this little storyline, which would see its resolution very soon. But yeah, this is your standard stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
This has been how it's been all on the tour of them just.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, they're the big heel unit, so they should be running. Yeah,
for now. And okay, so things really pick up from here. Relatively speaking, Kano and Kenta defeated Kazuyuki Fujita and Uka Sasaki in 15:23 with the go to sleep from Kenta on Sasaki. I believe this was my match of the show. And yes, Kenta and Fujita just pummeled each other.
Yeah. Like Fujita seems like more motivated recently, I would say. So
yeah, maybe he's having his Hideki phase.
Yeah, he's finally realizing like, okay, maybe. Maybe I can't get away with all of my bullshit anymore if I want to keep earning money.
No one else is going to give him a paycheck either.
Yeah, might be it as well. But I really love Ken Kentag. I think King Kentag like only had a couple of matches together, but I think I'm already like putting them onto my consideration list for like tag team of the year. I know it's early because we're only in March, so we'll see. But like I am very confident that they're going to be in there if they stay together long enough.
Well, look, you know, right now, the only certifiable draw as a tag team in Japan is the Saitos.
Yeah.
I think Ken will be given a chance to demonstrate that they can draw. They'll be in like...
Definitely. I mean, like, we still don't know what's up with the heavyweight tag titles, right? Because they just kind of have been in limbo for like over a month now.
Yep.
But I do expect Ken to like probably beat like some sort of like... maybe like Morris and Endo, or maybe Morris and Dalga, who knows how that actually goes, and to like win the titles. So, and I think that match could be really good too. And then I think they're going to have some really interesting defenses. And then, yeah, as you said, I think they're going to be expected to like draw on top of shows once they're the champions.
Yeah. And then next up, the 25th anniversary special, Arc Legend. Masakino Miya defeated Naomi Chimara Fuji in 1634 with a Saito suplex. Now, Paul, I saw some rather harsh reviews of this match. I enjoyed it for what it was. They did not turn it, the dial up to 11 by any means, but I just thought this was a solid, well-wrestled match. Like 3.25, 3.5.
Yeah. I mean, it was very solid. I guess maybe where I was like, I don't know, like where for me, I think where it fell short is basically that it was like the only other like singles match on the show, and they did try to sell this as like a special match when A, I don't think it really is, and then B, that they just kind of went out there and had like a spot show match. Like that's what it felt like to me. Like it didn't really feel like a match that you would have on a big show. It felt like a match that you would have in like the Akros Fukuoka, right? Okay. Like it was perfectly acceptable, but it just never really got to like another level. It's just like, here are two perfectly good professional wrestlers having a perfectly fine professional wrestling match, which is okay. But like, I just would like there to be more on a big show like this, especially if like the winner of this is then like challenging the winner of the main event.
Yeah, no, I get that. I just thought some of the reviews were very harsh.
It wasn't bad. It definitely wasn't a bad match, no.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get back to your show in just a minute. Do want to let you know about a brand new sponsor, though, we have on the network, NordVPN. NordVPN aims to make the internet a better place for everybody. You can free your internet from online threats, censorship, and surveillance, as well as access content that is not available in your region. And this was one of the great ways that I use NordVPN. With WWE moving all their content to another streaming service internationally, you can use NordVPN to switch your region and access everything that they have on that new service. Now, on the flip side, say you still want access to where WWE used to have their content, and maybe you live outside the United States. Well, hey, NordVPN again is there to help. It's not just wrestling, though. If there's a sporting event or a TV show that's unavailable where you live, do not worry. You can still watch it with NordVPN. Just switch your virtual location to a country that is showing it. Plus, NordVPN is a great way to protect your private data like bank details and passwords, especially when you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. One of the things that I love about NordVPN is that you can save money on flights, hotels, and subscriptions by virtually changing your location to a country with lower prices. As someone who travels a lot, you guys know vacations and all the other stuff. This is a tool that I use all the time to score better deals. Shop smarter with NordVPN. Come on, what are you doing? And don't worry about slow streaming either. NordVPN is the fastest VPN out there, so no more buffering or lagging. It even has a threat protection feature that blocks viruses and phishing sites. Best of all, you can use one account on up to 10 devices, and it costs about the same as a cup of coffee each month. Now, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to our link, nordvpn.com/voice, which will give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. Again, it's nordvpn.com/voice to get 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. Best of all, there's no risk. Nord has a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not happy, use that right there, 30-day money-back guarantee. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/voice to get 4 extra months on the 2-year NordVPN plan. One more time, nordvpn.com/voice to get 4 extra months on the 2-year NordVPN plan. And, of course, we want to thank NordVPN for sponsoring the podcast network. Now, back to your show.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
It wasn't that bad. I just didn't like what they delivered for the spot that they were in.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. And then we move on to the NOAH Junior Tag League Final. Amasaka and Junta Miyawaki defeated Mark True and Kieran Lee in 10:40 by referee stop. I thought this was actually quite good. Probably the best match that Lacey and True were involved in up until the spot where they had True's legs, or was it Lacey? No, it was True.
Yeah, True was the one that got knocked out.
True's legs draped over the middle rope, and then Amasa did a swanton bomb, but just hit him in the face and knocked him out. And the ref wisely stopped it, and True was moving, but he had to still be stretchered out. So I got to say, though, Lacey did a very smart thing by getting in their faces, trying to sell like
his
appointment and everything, right? That's smart professional.
No, that was really good instincts from him, especially for someone so young, because he's like 22.
Yeah. So very disappointing, because I thought that match was on pace to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm. It probably would have been my match of the night without the injury.
Yeah, very possibly. Would have been the match of the tournament too. They're working really hard, going at a great pace, flying around and everything. But just unfortunate that way.
Yeah. They were escalating things real nicely as well. And then it just is unfortunate. I actually, like, when the injury happened, I actually got really scared for a moment, because True was just like completely like just still not moving at all. So I was happy when, like, after a while it became clear that, like, it was probably like quote unquote just a concussion, right? Because my first instinct was like, oh no, did I just like see somebody get like paralyzed basically? And luckily it wasn't that. Like, luckily it seems like, as far as I know, like, he's fine now, right? Like, he's out of the hospital and everything. And so,
I mean, he was moving his arms and legs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, he started moving around like pretty quick. Like, it was clear that, like, after a bit, it was pretty clear that he was just knocked out, like, from the way they put him on the stretcher as well and everything. So, but like, just in the moment, I was like, oh no, like, this could be really bad, because he just wasn't moving at all. But he's fine. I mean, I am very certain, like, that these guys are going to be back as well, because like, they got the win. They got the win over the A. They got to the finals. B. They got to the. They beat the champions on their first match, right, in the tournament.
Yeah.
So, like, they're definitely going to get a title shot. I feel like, they're definitely going to be brought back, and I feel like they're going to get a title shot too. So, which again, I think again, they're 22. So, like, that's exactly the kind of guys you, like, want to, like, bring in, and then let's see if you can, like, develop them into something.
Yep, for sure. And then we get to our main event for the GHC heavyweight title and national title. Ozawa defeated Manabu Sonya in 23-08 with the Real Rebel, both titles. Look, I thought the last couple of minutes of this were pretty good, actually, with the near falls. But I got to say, and Ozawa was great at that. But here's the thing. Name a good lumberjack match. You can't do
it. Oh, yeah. No, there aren't any.
The interference, I guess, what can you expect? It was going to happen, and just to make excuse to make it easier. Mm-hmm. And obviously, they teased the Kikuchi turn, but it turned out to be Tadasuke turn and joined Team 2000X, leaving Passionate Rattles. And okay. Fine.
I actually kind of expected that, not going to lie.
A Tadasuke or a turn?
The Tadasuke turn, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I thought about it and I was like, which one of these makes the least amount of sense? I was like, well, Sonya only joined Rattles because of Tadasuke. So it makes the least amount of sense for Tadasuke to be the one turning. So it's definitely going to be him.
Mm-hmm. And also at the end of the match, Ozawa just throws the national title on.
And it's vacant.
Yeah. Bad way to vacate a title.
So now half the titles, not half the titles, but like there's like two titles vacant now on Noah.
So I cannot hate this match, but I was, because there was some good wrestling down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot love. I don't
know. Just like recently I watched a match that also had a boatload of interference that I liked a lot more than this one, which was the Saya Kamatani versus Tam Nakano match from Stardom.
I still haven't watched that yet, actually. I gotta watch that.
That one, actually, I think has even more interference than this one, but like it works much better in that match than it does in this match. But I don't know. I think, like, aside from the interference, though, I do think it's...
There's also the thing of, okay, you want to use interference against Kaito, fine. But I think Ozawa can beat Sonya clean, especially if you're trying to establish him.
Yeah, because it's not like it's Manabu Sonya. Like, I think he's done really well, like, reinventing himself and, like...
Yes.
Taking supplements to, like, enhance his look and everything.
Supplements.
But, yes. like, like food supplements, right? Like that's all that's happening here. Just food supplements. You know, but like at the end of the day, it's Manabu Soya. Like it's fine.
He's 40,
you can beat him clean. You know. Exactly. Like we know what Manabu Soya is. Like this is probably one of the, like, it's probably the best run of his career. And even then, like, he's an upper mid-carder. Like it's what he's always been. So yeah. Like that's a guy, especially if you want to establish Ozawa as like, he's the hottest guy like in Japan. So if you want to just like, that's a guy that you can just beat clean as like Manabu Soya. I mean, maybe they're going to do that with Masaki Tamiya because he challenged after, but yeah, we'll see if they do or not.
So yeah, Masaki Tamiya came out. I was kind of expecting, I'm not going to lie, I was expecting Mar Fuji to win that match and challenge Ozawa.
Yeah, but it seems like again, this makes me think that this Ozawa reign is going to go on for a while because they haven't really given him like a big challenger yet.
No.
He's faced Galeno, he's faced Soya, now he's facing Kitamiya. None of which have like a chance of winning.
Especially Soya and Kitamiya are, especially Kitamiya are the throwaway defenses.
Yeah, no, that's very much
Soya
a like.
Soya was a title match.
Yeah, that's like the guys who used to pad your like title reign, basically.
Yeah, like they had Kitamiya versus and everything like that, right?
Yeah. So
the only time that Kitamiya didn't feel like a throwaway challenger was when Nakajima champion last time.
True, yeah, because they had that win over him in the cage match where he took his hair. Yeah, that's fair. That felt like the only time where like Kitamiya had a realistic chance of winning. Whereas here, no, like I would be shocked if Kitamiya wins this. Like I literally like, I don't know. I give him a 1% chance, which is a freak injury, and then he wins it that way, basically.
I think they should shake things up and have Ozawa Blue in that Kitamiya.
Ooh. Yeah, that's actually a good idea. I think Ozawa would like, I think that would be like a good look on Ozawa as well, like blood. I think that would work really well, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, good finishing stretch. Just the mat format, I don't know. Look, this is drawing right now. I don't know. It's not completely for
me. I mean, lumberjack matches, I mean, as you mentioned, like lumberjack matches are always shit. Like, especially in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Americans know how to do lumberjack matches or really anybody knows how to do lumberjack matches. But like Japanese promotions definitely don't know how to do lumberjack matches. I think
we've
got a couple of examples of it now and they never, ever work.
I mean, I think they could still probably do exactly what they're doing now for a bit longer before like the fans stop going, to be honest, which I don't know. I'm not going to lust, but it is what it is, right? And it is still the most, whatever its weaknesses, and I think there are many, it is still the most dynamic years.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's just, they kind of need to, like, develop. Like, I think it's going to pick up a lot once, like, Ken Tag, like, takes over the tag division, because right now it's, like, it's Ozawa and that's it, right? Yeah. There isn't really that much else. So, because it's also, like, Eita hasn't really done anything either with the junior title, so I assume there's going to be some movement in that now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, I think there's, like, a bunch of stuff that will get started after the show. Where it's like, it's going to be more than like just the Ozawa show.
So what do you think they should do with the national title?
Haven't they already announced that they're going to do a tournament?
Oh, I missed that. I didn't know.
I don't know. I just saw that like a bunch of people were basically like, yeah, I want the national title. I want the national title. So I don't know if they formally announced the tournament yet, but like it does seem like
this degrades the title.
Yeah, but and also the other weird thing is like, okay, but then are they going to do a tournament for the national title? And are they then also going to do a tournament for the heavyweight tag titles, which are also vacant right now? So are they doing two tournaments?
I don't know.
Noah will like, even at its heights, Noah will be very confusing.
Exactly. So we look ahead then to March 22nd at Korakuen Hall. We've got the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title, Hayata and Yohei versus Amasaka and Junta Miyawaki. I mean, obviously, I think we both agree who should win this match.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But like, what's Junta take the pin?
Yes. And by what our choice is obviously not the Rattels.
No. But like, watch Rattels win and then Hayata turns on Yohei.
Yeah. And then they vacate them.
Yes. And then Amasaka and Junta Miyawaki make it to the final, but then they lose to like True and Lacey in that final.
Yeah. And then for the GHC Junior Heavyweight title, we got Eita versus Alejandro, which I think we both said last episode we were looking forward to. It could be really good because Eita is motivated right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then The main event will be Ozawa versus Masaki Miya for the GHC heavyweight title. I mean, it could be really good. They could bog it down with stupidity.
Yeah. It probably will. But Masaki Miya doesn't have any, like, friends. Okay, that sounds really harsh. He doesn't have, like, any allies, right?
Maybe Daiki Inaba can come and make the save.
And turn on him. I mean, I'd be curious. Has Daiki ever been a heel? I don't think he was one in Wrestle 1.
What factions? I'm trying to think what he was.
I think he was always a babyface. Like, he was always the guy fighting Enfance. Pretty sure. I don't think he was ever
a heel. He was in New Era.
Yeah.
With Jiro.
Yeah, so he was always, like, the big, like, babyface and everything. Like, I don't think he ever... he was just a New Era. Like, that was the only one he was in. So I think he's always been a babyface. So
yeah,
maybe it's time. Maybe he's a great heel somehow. Maybe that's the thing that will, like, launch his career into, like, the stratosphere.
Well, I don't think that Team 2000X is going to start adding random members every show, though.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like, I think that might be the downfall. Where, like, I'm afraid that might be the route they're going down, but we'll see.
Yes. So now we move over to All Japan, and they had a show on Valentine's Day. It should be the first ring in front of 339 fans, super no vacancy, full house. And we start off with the Valentine's Day special six-man tag match. Rio Inoue, Taishin Nagao, and Seigo Tachibana defeated Musashi, Rising Hado, and Atsuki Aoyagi in 13-17 with the Yankee Hammer from Tachibana on Musashi, which was obviously going to build up to upcoming title match that we'll talk about. And, you know, I thought this was a good, solid junior open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's what you would want for Valentine's Day, right? But to be fair, actually, you know what? I think actually this is something you would want for Valentine's Day because it was pretty good. So
yeah,
I'll put aside my cynicism.
Yeah. Okay, and then for another Valentine's Day special singles match, Ryoki Honda defeated Seki Yoshioka in 10:04 by pinfall. This was pretty good. And they were together. Some Wrestle 1 reunion here.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Yoshioka got a lot of offense in here, too. This was not a squash fight or anything like that. So, very good match.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I keep forgetting that Honda is originally a Wrestle 1 guy. I thought this was really good. And, again, I was surprised how much offense Yoshioka got as well. And, I don't know. I just hope that eventually maybe he will get a bit more of a singles run somewhere. Because he just, every time he has a singles match, I'm like, yeah, this guy's really good. And then it's like he has like 3 in 1 year, basically.
And then we had some Hantai versus Baka no Jidai. Hideki Suzuki and Hikaru Sato defeated Shotaro Shino and Dan Tamura in 12:17 by referee stop when Suzuki had Tamura in the Cobra Clutch. Well, I like this a lot, but it was on the mat the whole time.
Yes. Yeah, this was complete just like mat work and nothing else. Like, I thought that was really good, though. Like, again, so, like, you look at the guys in there, right? Like, and that's what you expect from them.
Yeah. And just the continue. Well, we'll talk about where Tamura and Hideki are doing, but I do like their frenemies, I guess.
Yeah. I also like that Dan isn't backing down, where he's just like, Hideki's like slapping him and he just immediately like slaps him back and everything.
Oh, yeah. Dan never backs down. Yeah. I mean, that, like, I think just him as he can be a heavyweight and just do that.
Yeah. Which I don't know. I still feel like that's what he is now. Like, I don't think he's a junior anymore.
We'll see with the next tournament or when he comes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Watch him be in like the Junior Battle of Glory and win like 2 matches.
Yeah. And then a Valentine's Day special singles match. Rei Saito defeated Kumarashi in 10:34 with this. Again, much like my love for Rei Saito versus Jack Kennedy. This is better. Also, just fun to see the big guys.
Yeah. No, definitely. It was just like both of them just kind of clashing into each other. And again, as we can see, like they keep giving like Rei singles matches, which I do think is notable.
Yeah.
Because again, they could just put him in like a match with like the like other like with like Doi or like Senior Saito, right? But instead, he's given these like singles matches.
Yeah. And then the main event, Yuma Anzai, Ren Ayabe, and Kuroshio Tokyo, Japan defeated Kento Miyahara, Yuma Aoyagi, and Hokuto Omori in 18:09 with the death roulette from Ayabe on Omori. Paul, this when you say All Japan is a comedy promotion, this is what we mean. Which is such a funny comparison to that one match that we talked about on the last episode. That was the main event of that one other spot show. I can't remember. Was it a six man or eight man tag? But you know the one I'm talking about. That was
really the Elpida. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then we had this. I mean, yeah, sure. Fine. It's main event. I mean, it was good, but it was not what you could have. It wasn't the peak of what All Japan could do on a small spot show with an event.
Oh, for sure. Like, again, this was one of those where, like, Jiro was replacing June, right?
Oh, that is right, yes.
Yeah, so I feel like that probably also, like, changed the, like, tone of the match. Because I feel like if June would have been in here, that would have been a very different match.
Yeah, exactly.
That probably would have had a lot less comedy than this had, because this was a lot of comedy.
Yeah. But otherwise, the mid-card of the show was pretty good.
Yeah. No, for sure. Like, I mean, for, like, a spot show on, like, Valentine's Day, you know? I mean, I was also going to make a joke about, like, yeah, that's the most romantic thing you can do on Valentine's Day is go to Shinkiba first ring. But, like, if I had a partner and I was in Japan during Valentine's Day and, like, she gave me, like, tickets for the show, I would be the happiest man in the world. So, you know what? Never mind.
All right. And from there, so we move on to February 24th at Sforza Arena, Hachioji Main Arena, in front of 1,870 fans. And Paul, this is the third straight year in a row that they've done this. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they have gained attendance every year. And they have now packed about almost 500 more fans than they had in 2020.
Yeah. Which that's a really, like, that's a massive improvement, basically, like, within 2 years. Like, 500 additional people, like, that's a lot. Like, that's a lot of extra tickets sold. Like, that's a lot of extra money coming in.
Especially for All Japan.
Yeah.
So, we start off with the Hantai versus the Saito brothers. Ken Omiyahara and Taishi Nagao defeated Mr. Saito, Naruki Doi, and Senor Saito at 8:46 with the shutdown suplex hold from Miyahara on Saito. I actually enjoyed this for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Taishin Nagao got his little shine in, and then, of course, Kento. But a perfectly good opener, get the crowd hot with Kento out there.
Yeah, also have, like, Kento and, like, Doi face off as well, which I think is nice, because that's not something you see that often.
And then Ryuki Honda, Ren Ayabe, and Sego Tachibana defeated Hokuto Omori, Kumarashi, and Jack Kennedy in 14:22 with the death roulette from Ayabe on Omori. You know what? This was actually good. I thought
it was fine. I actually like Sego's, like, interactions with, like, Ayabe and Honda. I think they actually played off of each other, like, pretty nicely. Because you just had, like, him being, like, his goofy, like, self, and then basically, like, Honda and Ayabe just being like, who the fuck is this, like, little shithead?
Yeah.
And then him staying out there, like, shirtless, doing guest commentary for the Jiro match after.
Yes, well, that's a perfect transition for the Gaero TV title. Yuka Miyamoto defeated Kurosu Yotoki with the Moonsault Press. Paul, I remember very little from this match other than the finishing sequence where they kept trying to hit moonsaults and they kept moving and then tried to hit moonsaults and moving, and then finally Miyamoto got his win with
And Miyamoto kind of, like, overselling it almost, like, after he won, where, like, I don't know, like, he was like, oh yeah, like, I don't know. Like, because he played it up like he just had this, like, 40-minute epic with, like, Jiro. When, I don't know, it was a perfectly acceptable, like, mid-card title defense.
Yeah, it was fine. And played for the laughs. And then Hideki Suzuki, Hikaru Sato, Kengo Mashimo, and Seki Yoshioka defeated Shutaro Ishino, Musashi, Dan Temer, and Ryo Inoue in 11-11, Make-A-Wish, with Yoshioka pinning Musashi with the La Magistral, which frankly I think gives away the results of the next junior title match through the next junior challenge.
Yes, it does. But to be fair, I feel like that's already what they were, like, building up.
Yeah,
for
they were
well,
already
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he came into the ring and everyone's like, oh, they're going to do Yoshioka versus Musashi. And then Yoshioka was like, the next challenger sent in a video, actually. So, yeah, no. They're definitely teasing it. So, yeah, I think they're building to it. So.
And what were your thoughts on this match?
No, I like the match overall. It's good to, like, see. It's always good to, like, see Kengo Mashimo back and everything. Yeah.
Would you say though you were expecting a little more with some of the names involved? And I feel like this on another show with these guys, where they're now just doing comedy too.
Yeah. No, it was a bit too much comedy as well in this. I feel like there was definitely like a bit of an issue with the card overall, that there wasn't that much to like sink your teeth into here either. So,
well, it's
there's definitely something missing on the undercard right now.
It's funny you should say that, because I actually did think this show was a little better than people said it was, but we'll get into that in a minute. All Asia Tag Team titles, Rising Hayato and Yuma Anzai defeated Astronauts, Fuminori Abe, and Takuya Nomura in 1351 with a Sid Vicious from Hayato on Abe for the third. Paul, this is awesome. But the biggest problem with this match was it wasn't 5 minutes or 10 minutes longer.
Yes. I would have absolutely loved this match if it was like a little bit longer.
I mean, I went 4 stars, but I mean, they could have had a match of the year with some more.
Yes, absolutely. Like, I almost felt like that's where they were going, and then the match kind of just ended.
Yeah.
Because I felt they definitely left like stuff on the table here.
Yeah. I mean, Nomura was awesome.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
And Nomura was so good. Yeah.
So it is a sort of almost, it's like almost a little frustrating. And I said this, this is only third from the top, and I'm like, I don't think that's good.
And yeah.
Get enough time.
No, yeah, it definitely didn't get enough time. Actually, what I really loved as well was like Nomura in general, but especially like the stuff he was doing with Anzai.
Yeah,
like that's absolutely a singles match I want to see.
Kind of a shame that Nomura's not in the Champion Carnival, actually.
Yeah, I was that was probably one of the biggest surprises that he didn't make it into that, especially since he's a freelancer now. But yeah, might be that he has like other commitments already.
And then next up, Wrestling Brothers special singles match. Atsuki Ariyagi defeated Rei Saito, 15-31 by pinfall. Okay, look, the finish was stupid. It was a bad, but people were just shitting all over this match. I thought it was fine, except for the finish, which sucks. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
What did you think, though?
No, I agree. Like, the match, maybe it was like, I maybe had a little bit higher expectations because I thought these guys had like really good, like, chemistry otherwise, but like I think it was a solid match structure. It was kind of the expected match structure as well, right? Where like Saito just kind of tossed Atsuki around.
I feel like Atsuki got more offense than I thought at the same time.
He did, but it was still like very much like Saito like dominating the match. Yeah. But then yeah, no, the finish very much like kind of ruined things, where like yeah, the finish was shit. The finish was like, there's really no defending that finish. Like, I don't even know why they did it either. I guess maybe it's that the Aoyagis get something, but like, if you want to build up Rei for this big title match with June, that like you very
you
obviously want to do,
you got the
you do, but like, I don't know. Like, maybe to like say that Rei still has something to overcome. I don't know. Like, it's still. Like, at the grand scheme of things, I guess it doesn't really matter. It's just kind of left a sour taste in my mouth. That's the thing. I get that the match before that was pretty good, but, like, the finish was so bad that, like, it really kind of ruined it for me.
And then we go to the main event for the Triple Crown. Jun Seto defeated Yuma Aoyagi in 23 minutes and 48 seconds with the new finisher, The Day's Gone. You know what, Paul? I actually thought this was good, and although the finish was a little flat because people didn't know this.
Yes. People were, like, not really react. People were like kind of surprised with it. Let's put it that way.
But I thought Yuma looked better here than he had in more recent singles matches, if I'm being honest, too.
Yeah, he took things seriously as well.
Yeah.
So, well, except for him coming out for the match. Like, that was weird at the very beginning. Well, like, he came out while Atsuki was still, like, walking to the back.
Yeah.
That was kind of weird. But, like, otherwise, yeah, this was really
They've done that exact same thing with the Saitos before, too, though.
Yeah, but, like, the Saitos have the same theme song.
Ah, true, yes.
So that works really well. So you can literally just, like, you don't have to, like, stop the song. Where in this case, they stopped Atsuki's song, despite the fact that the winner of the match hasn't yet walked to the back, and started Yuma's song instead. So that was a bit jarring. Whereas with the Saitos, you can do that because you just keep playing Dream Warriors, and the other one just comes out, and the crowd pops. Because it's awesome.
But, I feel like, what does this have on? Whoa, this is only got 696 on Cage Match. I thought it was a little better than that.
It definitely was better than that. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like the greatest Triple Crown match ever, but like, I thought it was like a pretty good like defense and everything.
Cause I was a little nervous about this.
Yeah, no, it definitely exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, for sure.
I was like, this could be a bit shaky. Like, who knows? Like, with Yuma being like in a weird like funk or whatever. It definitely could have been like bad and boring, and it wasn't. It's not going to make my match of the year list or anything like that.
No.
But I definitely was like entertained.
Well, they also hit the sweet spot because they shouldn't have gone any longer than they did.
No, absolutely not. Like, that's really the thing that, like, with the site, with June, like, this, like, there's an upper limit how long you can go with him.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't advise to do any, like, time limit draws with June Saito. That's not going to work out well for you.
Although there's a certain perverse thing I'd like to see a Saito versus Saito 60-minute draw.
He might die.
All right. And then after the match, Kenta came out in his suit and challenged. Were you expecting that or...
A little bit, actually, because like Kenta won like in the opener, right? And there wasn't really like an obvious challenger otherwise. Like, especially like in terms of like people that won on the show. Like, maybe, right. Like, but I didn't think that they were going to do like June Saito versus Ren Ayabe. Like, if, like, the actually more so than like Kenta coming out challenging, I was more surprised that they're going to do another challenge before the Champion Carnival.
Well, they got an Ode War gym show at the end of March, so.
Oh, yeah, okay, so they need to do that one. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Again, like, Kenta is like, who else are you going to do there, right?
Yep.
Like, you've already, like, you've done Yuma now, like, you've already done Anzai. So Kento's kind of the last one left, basically.
Yeah. So then we're going to preview, and we go jump ahead a day, probably from 2 days from us. March 9th, Corican Hall. We've got, this is the first match of the show, I might add, Gaora TV Championship, Yuko Miyamoto versus Mr. Saito Naruki Doi. Paul, do you think they would belt up Doi with the TV title?
I kind of hope so. Like, I don't know. Miyamoto reign isn't doing much for me. Like, it's not bad. It's not bad, but I'm also, like, ready to move on because I think there's more interesting people that could hold this belt.
Yeah. And then we got Atsuki Aoyagi and Taisha Nagao versus Shuji Kondo and Seki Yoshioka.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks pretty good.
Yes. I mean, it's Yoshioka probably going to win, yeah.
And Kondo rough over.
Yeah.
Third match, Hokuto Spring Tryout 2025. Hokuto Kuma Arashi and Jack Kennedy versus Masada in the World, Takeda of the World, and Yoshida of the World. So I don't know who Takeda and Yoshida are, but I would assume Masada is Masada.
Yes. Is Senior Saito booked on the show, per chance?
No.
Okay. So he's not getting double. He's not like, do you think he would get like paid twice or if he's just like, if he's double booked or if they're just.
I don't know.
But yeah, I expect this to be comedy. Like, this seems very much like.
Of course.
A comedy undercut tag match, yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who the other two are. We have for the... we don't have a date on this match yet, but I assume it'll be on March 29th, maybe. But Dan Tamura and Hideki Suzuki are going to be challenging for the All Asia tag titles. Now that Dan and like Hideki are frenemies. So we've got Rising Hado, Yuma Anzai, Ryuki Hanada, and Ren Ayabe versus Hideki Suzuki, Shotaro Shino, Dan Tamura, and Ryo Inoue. Now, that looks pretty darn good on paper.
Yeah.
What the execution is.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the problem right now with All Japan.
And then we have Musashi versus Seigo Tachibana for the PWF World Junior Heavyweight Championship. I mean, pretty decently high expectations, but I do think Musashi will.
Mm-hmm. No, because it's really obvious that they're setting up Seki Yoshioka, so it doesn't make sense for Musashi to lose here.
Yeah, and they've got it in the semi-main spot, so they'll get a couple minutes. They'll get a decent amount of time.
It will be a good match for sure.
Oh yeah, for sure. And main event, World Tag Team Championship, June Saito and Rei Saito versus Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi. They're making their ninth defense of the World Tag Team titles here. What do you think, Paul? Do you think Yuma's pinning someone?
Yeah, I think it's time to like end the Saito reign. Because I think I've talked about this before, right? Like this, like it feels like nothing else is going on except for the Saitos. Yeah. In All Japan. So I think it really is like time to like just like at least get the tag titles away from them for now. Like they can always like win Real World Tag League. Like once June is no longer Triple Crown champion, they can always like have them win the Real World Tag League and then like have them win the belts. Like either like at the either at the year end show or like at the early year Hurricanes or whatever. But like until then, like while Kento and Yuma aren't exactly the freshest choice, at least I feel like something else is happening in All Japan besides the Saitos if they win the titles. And again, they're a really good team. So like they've been around forever now at this point. So That would be my issue with belting them up yet again. But at the very least, like, they would give us like really, really good matches.
Yeah, and they're the only other tag team that can draw.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe like if you put like an Anzai team or something.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I have pretty good high expectations.
Oh, yeah. No, the match would be really good. Like the match definitely, like these two teams have shown that like if they face each other, like they pretty much always have like really good matches. So I do expect that here as well. Like, especially if like this Yuma from this show shows up and not like, I don't know, Yuma over like the last couple of months.
Slight technical difficulties on my internet connection, but I was asking Paul, is there any chance that they could retain the Satos?
I think there is a chance that they retain. Like, it depends like how heavy they want to like keep pushing the Satos, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if they just want to have them be these like all dominant like guys going into their like big title match against each other, then like you keep the belts on them, right? And then they like go into the match like brother versus brother while they're also the tag champions. They're literally dominating the entire promotion. Like, June as Triple Crown champion, Ray just won the champion carnival. Like, they hold all of the heavyweight belts, destroyed everybody, and now they're going to face each other. And like the final showdown to determine who's the better brother. Then I think if they want to do that, but like, I feel like if they also want to like draw better on like spot shows or like, freshen up the promotion a bit, like I think they should have them lose the titles because it feels oppressive in a weird way right now. Like, I love the Saitos, but it's like it's only Saitos right now. It's like all Saitos all day.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And it just seems like the right time. So, and I would assume on the show, I don't know for sure because I don't see it announced yet, but I would assume we're getting the Champion Carnival actual card.
Yeah,
because the 29th is the next big show, and that's too late to announce those cards, I think. Mm-hmm.
And so, that will also give us a good idea, like, who might be, like, winning, like, the A block. Because we know who's winning B block.
So on Sunday, March 23rd, we jump, it Shinkiba First Ring. New Age Chronicle returns with their sixth show at Shinkiba First Ring. And we got an Alpida special four-way, Rising Hado versus Yuma Anzai versus Reiki Honda versus Ren Ayabe. That will probably sell that out. I think it's already might even.
Yeah,
it is already.
I mean, yeah, it's Shinkiba.
Yeah, Jun Seto and Rei Seto versus Atsuki Hiroyaki and Seigo Tachibana.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be comedy.
Hokuto Omori versus Takahiro Katori, and Omori will finally get a win.
Yep.
We've got Ryo Inoue versus Ryoma Sukamoto making his return to All Japan.
Ooh. Okay, that's a really interesting one.
Yeah. Because he did some bodybuilding, and then he started showing up on like Hikaru Sato.
Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe he'll come back a bit more. But yeah, I mean, maybe they also keep it a short. It seems like he's a weekend warrior now. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, we got Dan Tamura versus Taishi Nagao versus Hiroyuki Suzuki and Shoto Kofu. And I want to highlight this Kofuji guy because I think he debuted in September with Osaka Style Wrestling, which is one of the many Osaka Pro offshoots. But he has got a good look.
Okay.
And I think there is something to keep an eye on with him.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I haven't seen him yet, so yeah, I'm looking forward to like.
I haven't seen him either. I'm just going by his look.
Okay, fair enough.
Right, like a good looking young guy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, that's all you need in Japanese days, isn't it?
If you can like sell a photo book with him on Rising Hayato, they can make a lot of money.
I think you can here, because he is on, but I don't know where anyway. But yeah, I'm just saying he's a good young looking guy, just debuted in September. And then Takayoshi Suzuki is your standard Niigata Pro indie scummer. So, but I have got my eye on this match because I want to see this Kofuji guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the 29th at Oda War Gym, all that's been announced is Jun Seto versus Miyahara. All right. Paul, do you have any closing thoughts? Oh, I have a question.
Yeah.
So I was sort of, because you know more about European, mm-hmm. I do. I was just going around looking, watching some Igel Blanc stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I couldn't help but notice that he's got a student named Kuro. And I watched a Curl versus Leon Slater match. It was pretty good. And so what do you think of this Curl guy? And he's got potential. Do you think he could end up in off the
pick? Curl? I don't think I've seen him, to be quite honest. Yeah. Like, I don't think he's brought Curl over to Germany yet. At least I'm trying to think if I've seen him. Let me just look that up real quick. Oh, it's this guy. Yeah, no, I don't know. He actually hasn't come across my screen yet. Yeah, no.
Okay.
So I don't actually, he's been around with Isla Blanc, but like he did go, but did I see him at WXW? No. So in theory, I could have seen him last year at 16 Karat.
Yeah.
Or not last year, 2023. But he was at the show I didn't go to.
Oh, okay. That's funny. Well, there's a match of him versus Leon Slater on YouTube.
I'm going to check that one out then, because that's probably pretty good. I mean, talking about a guy I would love to see come to Japan, like Leon Slater.
Yeah. Well, I guess who's TNA have a role?
And Noah. WWE. And who has a relationship with the WWE as well?
Yeah.
Noah. So, you know, that might be a possibility.
Yeah. Do you think? I mean, I think that would not be a bad idea. It could be. Yeah, but was Scott D'Amore the no-wait man?
Probably. I mean, again, there hasn't been any crossover with TNA in like forever, so.
I think it was like in 2019 was the last time when Mara Fuji said words on some pay-per-view.
Yeah.
If my memory serves me correctly, right?
So, yeah. No, that was definitely the last one, yeah. Hasn't been anything since then.
I sent you this Kofuji guy's Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at him right now. Yeah, no, I can see it. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, right?
No, that's definitely, that feels like a guy that All Japan is going to like want to put in like the pretty boy division.
Yeah, they'll put him in LP.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what they have. Like, they have the pretty boy division and they have the ugly horse division. And that's like, that's the promotion, basically.
Yeah, because it says just here he debuted on December 19th, 2024. So he is very fresh.
Yeah.
But he can go in the pretty boy. So, yeah. Well, I'll be looking at that. New Age Chronicles show's got a couple of things I want to see.
Already followed by Chris Harrington.
Huh.
Interesting. Yeah.
All right. So that is the show for this week. We will be back in a couple of weeks to talk about what's gone on in All Japan and Noah. We'll see if these companies maybe course correct on some of their more shaky elements, as we talked about this week. But we'll see you then and enjoy all the wrestling out there. Bye. Hey there. We're recording a very quick little epilogue because I forgot to talk about an awesome match that I watched go on February 29th. It was Takuya Nomura versus Suwama. And Paul, I haven't got a chance to watch the whole show. I wanted to, but I'm busy because I heard there was another really good tag with Hideki and Dan in it on the undercard. But this Takuya Nomura versus Suwama match, it's like, I don't know, 14 minutes.
Hmm?
And they just kick the crap out of each other. Nomura just goes wild on Suwama. And Suwama just gives him all these stiff lariats. Nomura's working the arm and everything. And, like, it's funny because Suwama doesn't do much, but it's all either Nomura on offense or Nomura selling, right? And then they suplex each other a bunch. Then, you know, Nomura tries to go for some submissions on the end. And then Suwama just locks him in a sleeper, in the Manriki sleeper, gets the referee stoppage, and then keeps it on. Abe rushes the ring and starts beating on Suwama, and then Ishikawa starts beating on them, and that's to set up a I can't remember the date, but it's going to be Violent Giants versus Astronauts.
Which, that's fucking awesome, yeah.
Yeah, so I just feel like I had to talk about this match and everything like that. Because you got to check it out on the February 29th Evolution show. It was the main event.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, because that was a pretty big match, which is interesting because, I mean, look, they've always had the men's matches on the shows.
Mm-hmm.
This is like really the first time they're really running with like a sustained storyline.
Well, to be fair, because they have like, yes, because this is like Suwama's like home promotion now since he's like not really around in All Japan anymore. So yeah. I feel like that might be that's probably the reason why they're doing that as well. And I mean, like, fuck yeah, give me like Violent Giants versus Astronauts. I probably go and watch this one now. But like, once that one drops, that's like appointment viewing because there's no way that's not going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know. Can they still go real hard? Like, do you think what it once could have been, but...
I mean, I would put it this way. The last great Twin Towers match is with Astronauts. And Suwama, like 2025 Suwama is way better than Kisato was even back then. Yeah.
So they have a show on the 24th of March on a Saturday, but I don't see that they've announced that tag match yet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. So this Astronauts match, when it happens, I don't know when, because on March 23rd, they've got Shuji Shikawa and Suwama versus Masayuki Kono and Sushi.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So perhaps that. Oh, this is a charity show. Okay. Maybe that's why. Yeah. Charity show Hadoyama Town. Okay. So April, we can.
Yeah. But I mean, again, once that drops, that's like, you know, instant watch, basically. Yeah.
So, yes, please. Oh, wait. Sorry. No. March 21st, Shinkiba First Ring. I was completely wrong. I found it. Astronauts versus Violent Giants. But it's the semifinal.
And should make tape as well, right?
Yes. Oh,
wait, what is the main eventing over that?
Oh, Nane Takahashi versus Zone.
Ah, okay.
Okay, that makes sense, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like part of a retirement countdown.
Yeah.
Takahashi's retirement countdown. So yeah, that makes sense. Okay. That also look. Oh, Paul, also on that show, Kengo Mashimo versus Dan Tamura.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, no, that. Okay, yeah, that, okay. I think I need to watch this entire show.
Yeah, yeah, that's opening match is you versus the new rookie Chika, which I
No, that sounds like a really, really good show.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll have to cover that show because it's looking good. So yeah, I'm glad we took the time out to record a little extra. But yes, definitely. Yeah. So I will say that Suwama is definitely pushing Evolution forward, new directions and everything like that, and it's looking real good. So yes. So we'll see you.
Actually, well, no, weeks. I have one small thing so that I just remembered too.
Okay, perfect. Well, this is
exactly. It's also real quick. It's just because Takuya Nomura, Big Japan, right? I don't think I unfortunately have the feeling that the Okabayashi hiatus is going to turn into a permanent retirement. Because there is some photos recently that like surfaced of him. I think he was like at Kikuda's birthday, I think it was.
It was him and Kikuda.
Yeah. And he looks very slim. Like, he does not look like a man that is like...
His head is still very large, of course.
His head is very large, but the rest of his body isn't anymore. He's lost a lot of weight, which good on him. But he definitely doesn't look like a guy that is like in a shape where he like wants to return to the ring anytime soon. And he looks very happy too, so good for him.
Well, if he wants... Yeah, he's got to probably take 6 months to get back in the ring if he wants.
Yeah, like he needs to eat a lot of Chanko to like get back into like Yuji Okabayashi shape, basically.
Yeah. So yeah. So I mean, hey, look, if he's happy, that's great. But it is
exactly.
Yeah. Big Japan could shoot.
Yeah, and again, like one of the great. I'm going to argue one of the greatest wrestlers ever. Just the body of work that is there is like just phenomenal. So yeah, it's a shame, but like, look, if as long as he's happy and like and everything with his body and wrestling and everything, I'll never fault a wrestler for like wanting to retire because this is like hell on your body. So if this is what makes him happy, then you know, who am I to argue against that?
Yeah. All right then. So now goodbye for real, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Take care.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week.
Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.